Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. I'm so pleased you're with me today because, as always, it's just a wonderful opportunity to share the knowledge that really allows us to get more empowered so we can make the best choices possible regarding our health and well-being and just really understanding in more depth who we are and how we can really shine in the world. And we have a great guest today, and it's a topic that actually is one of my favorite topics, and we're going to be exploring what your body is telling you, the connection between emotions and illness. And my guest today is Luke Adler. Now, Luke is a board-certified acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist in the state of Oregon. He is also a diplomat of the National Certification Commission for Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, which is the highest level of national certification for Chinese medicine. He studied Chinese medicine in Santa Monica, California at Emperor's College of Traditional Oriental Medicine. As part of his training at Emperor's, Luke completed medical internships at the Venice Family Clinic in West Los Angeles and the UCLA Arthur Ashe Medical Clinic. After completing his training at Emperor's College, Luke spent 3 months practicing Chinese medicine and acupuncture in an integrative clinic in rural India near Mumbai. Luke worked side by side with allopathic doctors, nurses, and Ayurvedic and homeopathic physicians. And he is the author of Born to Heal, Heal Yourself, Heal Your World, a fantastic book, by the way, which I've been reading and thoroughly enjoying. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Luke to the show. So, hello, Luke.
Good morning, Dr. Selman. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's great having you, and I have been telling you before we started the show how much I've enjoyed your book, Born to Heal. I am very passionate about Chinese medicine. I just really relate to it. I must have been, you know, like an acupuncturist or something in the past life because I really gravitate to Chinese medicine. I've studied it a bit in some programs over the years, and it just makes so much sense to me. And as I was also telling you, in my practice, I incorporate a lot of traditional Chinese herbs, customized tinctures with an herbalist that I work with, which has been so effective for my patients. So I just love what you're doing and the dedication you have in your work and the results that are in your book, Born to Heal. What I think we don't really understand as much as we need to in our culture when people are dealing with illnesses is this connection between the manifestation of physical illnesses and the emotional component that's going on within the person. And we can focus sometimes too much on one, too much on the other, and we don't know how to really read what's going on, certainly how to read the body as a feedback, you know, messenger of what might be more deep and meaningful emotional issues happening. And that's what I really loved about what your book did. It really helped people to understand this. So, first of all, congratulations on your book and all the hard work that went into it. And
thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, amazing labor of love, like you had said earlier. And the thing about Chinese medicine for me is in order to understand it, I needed to sit with it within my own body, and and in observing my patients and actually experience these things for myself. As much as there's kind of somewhat of an academic presentation, I think what many people are responding to in the book is, you know, I've lived through what I'm talking about, the emotions and the behaviors, and observed them and studied them as an experience, not just, you know, studying an ancient theory in a book and talking to fellow scholars and then making intellectual conclusions, but these are things that I've seen play out not just clinically, but in life, in relationships with people. And, some of the sentiments that you're echoing are really touching for me because, I think one thing that's unique about you is you understand Chinese medicine, you've studied it, and you can relate directly to everything I'm saying. So it's a unique interview for me to be able to have some time to really talk about the nuts and bolts of how this ancient, beautiful medicine functions.
And that's what we're going to take the time to do today, because the Chinese model, the traditional Chinese medical model, really, from the very beginning, from its origins, which is so ancient, has interwoven. You cannot separate the emotional component, the spiritual component, and how the body is expressing and what the body is expressing. That's just been part of this paradigm, which in Western medicine, of course, that doesn't exist. It's all about the body, the mechanics of the body, and altering the symptoms, but it doesn't look deeper into what is generating an imbalance that is manifesting as a symptom. And unless we look at what is generating the dynamic and not just feel it's bad luck that I just had a heart attack, right, you never really get the greater lesson and meaning of life as well.
Yeah, you're touching on such a poignant insight. I was on an interview actually yesterday with a surgeon, and she was recalling how in her rounds, surgery rounds in medical school, that the lead surgeon was, you know, they were opening up a body, and they're saying to the medical students, "Do you see a soul? Show me where the soul is. Can you see one?" You know, there's this very crude example of like the mechanistic approach to spirituality or energetics. And it's not to diminish Western medicine at all, because it has its righteous and powerful place in the world of healing. But your point is that Chinese medicine actually has at its root and fundamental source this place for the soul and the spirit and what they call, in more of an encompassing term, these ancient doctors, they call the heart. But the heart is this hub or this kind of prism that allows the energy of one's spirit or soul to kind of transmit. And when that transmission or that illumination of one's soul is occluded or blocked in some way, for whatever reason, that it begins to have physical repercussions on the body. And that's really what Born to Heal points to, is it starts to explain how that works and how the body is affected when we block the light of our own being, the light of the soul, the light of the kind of higher sense of self through the body. And that, as you said earlier, the body gives us feedback. It gives us kind of a biofeedback message to say, hey, something's off here. We need to pay attention and see if we can learn this way. And then, as we all know, when we do not pay attention, then the message will tend to get louder, and so on and so forth. And you know, we may not hear the message in this lifetime, and then you know, we'll come back and do it again.
What would you say if you could explain to someone from that traditional Chinese medicine point of view, the deeper truth, the deepest truth about how we are walking in this world with the body? What is the highest purpose based on the traditional Chinese model of, you know, what our body is here to help us do and achieve? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking a really deep and profound question, which is my favorite kind of question.
Mm-hmm.
There's three levels of evolution that Chinese medicine looks at with one's soul, with one's being. And the first level is the idea of survival. And we know some people, they're born and their entire life is just to find food and water and shelter. And that's it. And their entire life lesson trajectory is about survival. And then there's a second and third level of kind of evolution or movement of a soul through a series of lessons. And the second level is self-inquiry. You begin, your survival needs are met, and you get to a point where you can ask the question, well, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? You know, if I'm surviving, then, you know, what is the nature of my being? How do I move in the world? You know, how's my personality designed? How have my parents helped shape me? And you start to look at yourself and examine yourself and ask these deeper questions. And as you ask these questions, you may understand that, wow, I'm actually a soul, I'm a spiritual being. And then you start to kind of graduate, so to speak, to this third level of expression, which is service. And this third level is really the highest level, and it's to say, I am here to serve this awakening, this knowledge of light, this experience of peace and connection and unity in all beings. And so therefore my life is going to be an expression of serving the light in all beings. And I think what's interesting about this model is that we all move through this, of course, from birth through our lives. And we start to, at some point, notice that we're graduating. So I think for many people in the West, you know, in their teenage or 20s, they start to ask these questions, who am I? Why am I here? And some people may be in that stage for a long time. And then at some point, those questions are satisfied, and we move on to go, okay, I have a sense of who I am. I have a sense of why I'm here. Now let me do something with it. Let me help other people along their way. And there's kind of a lot of levels to this question. So I think I'll leave you with that piece of it. And then if there's a place you want to take that, we can dive in there.
Well, I think that's a good jumping off point to look at the various organ systems and the associated emotions and lessons of life that we're here to learn and embody and express out in the world. As we move through this really the spiritual process of life. I mean, our body is such a profound way that we are embodied, our spirit is embodied to express. So let's, you know, I'm just going to let you begin to go through the different organ systems and some of the issues and illnesses associated with them. And then from the perspective that you're working with that traditional Chinese model, what does that organ represent? What are some of the things we need to know or pay attention to if anyone is dealing with some of these health challenges, so they can go deeper and help move the energy that may be blocked so the healing can occur?
I want to make kind of an introductory point as I dive into this exploration. And it's to clarify this notion of soul, spirit, soul, body, feelings and emotions, and that how this process works is that the soul is physical in nature, meaning there's physical components to the soul as it embodies in form. And those physical components are related to the organ systems. What I've done in Born to Heal is relate the five major organ systems to the soul. And, of course, there are many other organs in the body that are in some ways in service to these five major organs, as stated by Chinese medicine. So the soul gets a certain message, per se, or impulse from God, from spirit, from universal love, from whatever we call that with a capital T. And there's a physical sensation that arises in the body. And we might call that sensation, just to make it distinct, we might call it a feeling. So we feel a heaviness in our chest, and maybe a tightness in the throat, and then the bottom of the eyelids kind of twitch a little bit, and then our throat gets dry, and then tears come up, and we'll call that sensation sadness. And so we'll say that sadness in that context is a feeling of the soul. And this is the thing about feelings, and this is a really interesting distinction, is that feelings have a beginning, they have a middle ground, and then they end, they complete. So that when we feel our feelings, there's a life cycle to them, and we reach the kind of their completion, and then we're done with that particular feeling. We can kind of move on to the next experience. Now, the distinction between a feeling and an emotion is that we feel that same sensation in the body, and then there's this belief or indoctrination that we've been brought up with that says sadness is a sign of weakness. If you feel sad, you need to basically suppress it. You need to push it back down into your body. And this is really the first action of disease, whereby the soul is having this feeling, and the feeling is there to expand our sense of life and to give us a broader sense of connection and compassion. And because we have this belief that says sadness is weakness, we disallow that feeling from moving, which is we disallow the soul from expressing, which is we ignore the message from the universe, or we push that message down into the body physically, and that emotional, which is always physical, experience becomes somatized, or it moves from quote unquote an emotional feeling experience to a physical experience of stagnation, which can turn into inflammation, which can turn into pain. So that secondary feeling or emotion is the response or the resistance to the experience of a feeling. And that is the beginning of this dis-ease illness process. And this then launches what I call the sequence of separation, which is this ancient paradigm of Chinese medicine that describes how disease progresses through the body, and how through this progression certain emotions, certain behaviors start to arise that signify the imbalance of one's connection to universal love or to universal grace or to God. So,
No, I just, as I'm listening to it, just the thought that came up was that, you know, to fully express who we are and be fully present and have the vitality, the energy, the joy, all the things that we're looking for that we define as a meaningful and happy life, you have to allow this life force to flow through us, this energy.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it, but it's the energy that animates us. It's the energy that allows us to live our life. And to the degree we are open to letting this energy flow, we have to feel. And I just remember, because I spent many, many years as a psychotherapist, and one of my main modalities was the breath. And I would just have people sit and breathe, right? Whatever their emotions were, whatever their issues were, you know, we basically would get back to just, okay, I just want you to breathe, and just get back into continuous circular deep breathing, and the emotions would come up, and it's like a wave. And it comes up, and it peaks, and then it recedes, and then that moves, the energy moves. And what you were talking about reminded me of how we bring that energy up, and then we don't let it complete. We don't let ourselves feel it. So we're always suppressing this energy, which, as you were saying, gets into the body as a blockage of our energy flows, and then we'll start causing disharmony in organ systems, and can progress to something much more chronic if it's not taken care of, which is why we have to learn how to feel and get past our cultural conditioning, whatever that may be, for whatever culture, so we can allow this life force to move through us and to heal our body and fill us with that energy and vitality and insight and intuition and all the things that really make a fulfilling life.
Right. Yeah, you summarized it beautifully, and this idea of feeling things into their completion, and that our feelings, there's a belief within culture, maybe even the world culture, that if you feel your feelings, and you know, for God's sake, express them, that you're going to be killed or ridiculed or diminished in some way, that it's going to destroy you. There's this experience like, if I feel this, I'm going to lose control. And of course, this is exactly what needs to happen, is we need to lose control. We need to let control be given to the thing that knows a lot more about our lives than we do. And I liken it to a river, and there's this river of energy that flows through us. And we're all of a sudden going, you know, I'm going to put a dam up around this one part of the river because I just don't like it. I want to dam this, and it changes the course of the river. And then before you know it, we've created, a reservoir, and there's nothing flowing until, of course, the water gets so high and it just breaks over the dam, which is just a matter of time. You know, it's just a matter of time before the energy, like, I love the word you said, that animates who we are, it moves us to where we're meant to be. You know, so we do have the free will to say, you know what, I don't want to feel this. And what's miraculous is we do have the physical capacity to store disease. I mean, we can go through, both in Western medicine and in Chinese medicine, and cite all of the organ systems and energetics that actually store disease until, of course, those reservoirs are completely full and disease can no longer be stored, and it spills out into a pretty much defenseless landscape that's been worn down by holding so much disease. And then you have what we have in, the West, an epidemic of exhaustion, autoimmune diseases, and cancer. It just is like so rampant. It's like I learn of a new friend every day that's been diagnosed with something pretty severe. And then, you know, not to get into how we actually treat these things, but it's kind of a whole other story and upset for me. But the key, as we, my view is that if we trace any form of disease back to its roots, we're going to find this experience. We're going to find a moment or many, many moments built upon one another where we've disallowed ourselves to feel. And I often get this question, is the answer then to, you know, if I feel and if I do my spiritual work and meditate, et cetera, and so on, will I heal? Will I, be free from physical disease? And of course the answer is no, because sometimes the lesson is the disease. You know, the lesson is the disease, and the lesson might be death, might be that our life is over. And, you know, of course there's many things to look at around death. That is another very scary topic, and many and most people do not want to talk about it, but it's something we do need to talk about as a culture and look at and celebrate. So it's very exciting. It's very exciting to be able to talk about these details with you.
So when we start this journey of going through the body and the different major organ systems based on Chinese medicine, and helping us to be more enlightened about what the issues may be or what the spirit of that organ is telling us. As people are listening to this, I just really encourage everyone to be open and to just pay attention to see what may be relevant for you that allows you to go deeper, because healing is a spiritual, physical, an emotional, mental process. You just can't do one if you want true healing and true resolution of the wounds that have contributed to our body being out of balance or our energy flows being impaired. So that's why this is so interesting, because it's a way for people to go a little deeper into who they are, so they can get the results and resolution they're looking for. So anyway, why don't you just begin this journey through the organ systems, Luke, so we can appreciate how they're all connected. And you did such a great job in explaining and how, how the systems work and how they're connected.
So you talked about the breath earlier, and it's, of course, very right on to how this sequence begins, because it kicks off with the lungs. And the reason it does that is the lung system, or the spirit of the lung, is related to embodiment. It's related to being in a physical body. And, of course, the first physiological thing that happens when we're born is we take a breath. And we transition from breathing fluid to air. And that first breath in Chinese medicine activates the energetics of every single organ system like a series of kind of dominoes in a certain sense. The whole body comes online. It's like the computer booting up, and that breath happens, and there's a sense, there's an initial sense of, wow, I am in a body, and, you know, of course, I'm in this really strange world, and there's lights and people looking at me, et cetera, and so forth. So we take a breath, and we're in a body, and in the same way, when something happens, and I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and you know, when something happens that is upsetting to her, you know, the first thing she does is she stops breathing for a moment. She, like, bears down. And then she yells out a big, you know, big cry. And then she'll heave these big breaths, you know, to kind of cope with this experience of, I did something wrong, or I want mommy, or, you know, I want daddy. And this is really the beginning of the sequence of separation, that when something arises in life that is hard to comprehend, it's hard to be with, it could be something totally benign. And this is something about sadness, is that sadness in general, which is the organ, which is the emotion associated with the lung, it's something that's really only relegated for kind of major events, like a loss of some kind, loss of a job, loss of a partner, loss of something significant. But, you know, there's things that are sad that happen all the time. So if we're not allowing ourselves to feel the sadness all the way through, like my daughter does, she feels it, she cries, and then she's done, and then she's happy and she starts playing again, then that sadness begins to impact lung function. And it actually fills the lung with kind of a heavy energy that weakens lung function, and, you know, could be displayed in a cough, wheezing, asthma, a propensity to colds and flus, allergies, sinusitis, so any kind of lung-related symptom. And then if that sadness is just lingering and not dealt with, we start to see the world through this lens of sadness and despair. And we kind of see what's wrong with everything. And this is one of the signs of the lung being out of balance, is that people start to see the glass half empty. And they're not conscious of the beauty and the miracle, and because they're laden with this grief. And so, of course, the breath work is one of the things, like you have used, is something that I use to help clear that grief load, that accumulation of grief, and allow people to feel again what they're grateful for, what they're thankful for. And one of the keys to moving through that is to start to share your gratitude. And you can write it down, you can tell your friends, but the key is to express it, express what you're grateful for. And just in doing that, it will start to bump up against sadness and start to clear it out of the body and feel through the unfelt sadness. So, you know, if you're comfortable with sadness, then you can work through it. You can get to gratitude. You can stay in a place of gratitude for your life. And the key is to keep sharing it. Share your gratitude with others. And this is, you know, despite some of the downsides of the kind of social media era, where most relationships are digital these days, the sharing the beauty and the gratitude that I see on social media is pretty cool. It's really uplifting. I love to hear about what my friends are doing. It's inspiring. So, you know, that's a way to share what you're grateful for. Should I go into the next one, Dr. Selman?
Yeah, I just want to add to that, you know, when we talk about expressing different emotions, one of the most difficult emotions, I think, in our culture is grief, how to really allow that emotion, which is an extreme form of sadness, to be expressed. We, you know, we do everything to shut it down, from, you know, drinking to drugs to going back to work, you know what I mean, and just staying busy, just disconnecting and shutting down that emotional energy, which means it just keeps bubbling away and finding any opportunity to pop up, but without resolution.
Exactly. Yeah, and what you're pointing to is so fascinating, because if sadness is something that we're uncomfortable with, then, of course, that energy, that flow of energy needs to find another outlet. And, of course, it's the imperative of the soul to express itself. So disease at some point becomes a form of expression. If we're not going to do it voluntarily, and this is true of all of life, if I don't voluntarily choose a career, well, the universe is going to choose something for me. We know this to be the case. And so there's this sense of, let me cooperate with where the universe is pointing me, as opposed to, you know, have my destiny be dictated to me in a certain sense. So this brings us to the next emotion, which is another really strong one, and that's anger.
Wait, can I ask you one question? Luke, before we go to that one, I want to ask you one question. So we talked about some of the conditions that are associated with suppressed sadness or grief, with the lungs, which can be everything from asthma to, you know, coughing or allergies or bronchial issues. What about more chronic conditions like lung cancer? Is that also, you know, a piece of this puzzle for people?
You know, it is, and I don't want to oversimplify it and say if you have this kind of cancer, this might be your emotion, but I would say there's some of that is definitely true, because, you know, if we're suppressing one arena, we're likely suppressing many arenas, and the key is just to kind of begin to, you know, delicately and gently open that box and just peel things back slowly and manageably, so that we're not overwhelmed by kind of a flood of, you know, repressed experiences. And that's why seeing someone like you or me is really helpful, to support people to do that in a really safe way. But yeah, I mean, cancer in its essence is an encapsulation, right? They're in general, not all cancers work like this, but they're accumulations of tissue that surround something. And what is that something at its root energetically? You know, we know there's cells that the body isn't recognizing as foreign in some way, and it aren't able to eliminate or, you know, cause their kind of upcycling. And, you know, there's the body surrounds this thing. And what is it surrounding? It's surrounding an experience of life that has not been addressed. And so it's not really that mysterious, right? There's, when you try to protect something, you surround it, you build walls around it. And that's what the body is doing. We've commanded the body to say, there's some thing here that I don't want to look at, or I feel afraid to look at, so I'm going to surround it with my own tissue, with my own blood, my own body fluids, my own jing, as we say in Chinese medicine, this kind of core fluid of the body, and I'm just going to push it over here until, you know, I'm ready to deal with it. And then, you know, in the case of cancer, we radiate it, we innervate it with these really powerful chemicals, and then we cut it out, you know, which in many cases helps. But, you know, to heal, like you said earlier, what we need to do is get to the core of that thing that we were covering up, encapsulating. And this is very complicated and kind of complex in how it manifests for each one of us. But I'm just speaking generally. I don't want anyone out there who's listening to really worry about, oh, my God, did I do this to myself, da 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 da. There needs to be more information. But in general, there always is an emotional, spiritual component to any disease and of course, you know, major diseases. So
yes, we don't want people to, you know, to get into blaming themselves. It's about the journey, this journey of addressing all the pieces that are required to restore health and well-being. And there are many pieces to the journey. It's a fact. So it's an exploration. So, okay, so we go from the lungs, and then we start talking about anger. Let's move on to the next system.
So if we don't feel our sadness, then the emotion that rises or the sensation gets more powerful. So it goes from this heavy sensation to this lifting, expressive sensation, which we would call anger. It rises up through the shoulders, the neck, the jaw, right? So you have TMJ, you have neck pain, you have upper back pain, you have migraines, you have premenstrual syndrome, you have menstrual disorders, different kinds of headaches, eye issues. As the anger expresses and then is suppressed, you get this symptomology. And so there's this sense at this point of like, I'm starting to feel off balance and not really aligned with my purpose. I'm not feeling connected to, you know, why I'm here. And the anger is really there to help us express ourselves. It's this animating kind of forceful energy that's saying, let's do something, let's say something, let's talk about what's imbalanced here. And again, if there's conditioning around anger, which there is for many people, it's either like shut it down and don't express it, or it just explode, then this sensation becomes symptomatic. And the two extremes that we see in its behavior I alluded to, and that's just kind of like arrogant, kind of belligerent, just like not sensitive to one's environment. And then the other side of the polarity, which is this kind of timid, kind of like shy, like I'm just, you know, I'm suppressing my anger. I don't want to show it. And so there's not an access to this balanced expression of power. It's really at the root of the liver.
So is that like the passive-aggressive person is the other side of it?
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just coming out in these, you know, these sideways, imbalanced ways. And what it reflects is that we're not in touch with the really core of our being and our essence, which the ancient word for this is that there's a sense of benevolence, or to use an even more simple word, a sense of goodness inside. That in our heart of hearts that we know that we're a good person. And that even if we make mistakes, which we are going to, quote unquote, whatever a mistake actually is, that our intentions are good. Even if there was some unconscious intention that was a little funny, that even deeper than that, what every soul wants is for healing and for love and connection and intimacy. And we might sometimes go about that in some really weird ways that don't seem in alignment with that. But as we get in touch with our inner goodness, then we can start to serve that goodness in all people. And that's the actionable step in, with the liver, is that we can serve the goodness. We can serve that purity that's at the heart of each being. And one of the ways that we find ourselves in a form of like deception with anger is that we feel a little cut off from an area in our lives. And we kind of are like, well, you know, I'm doing this thing. It doesn't kind of seem right to me. But it's okay. It's not a big deal. You know, like, it's really not that big of a deal. But there's this voice inside that says, yeah, but it bothers me. You know, there's something that bothers me. So we kind of compromise ourselves in a certain area, whether it's financial or our romantic life or our spiritual life or our social life. We do something that we feel isn't right, but we say, you know, it's fine. It's fine. I'll do it this time. And so we begin to bury this sense of what's true for us, what's good for us. And that begins to push us into the next organ system, which is the spleen and this idea of worry. So that if we don't deal with our anger, we start to create reasons why we don't do it. And those reasons turn into worry and rumination. And then we start to do things for people at the expense of ourselves. So actually at the expense of our own resources, of our blood, of our chi, of our yin, of our yang, of our jing, of our metabolic function, of our respiratory function, of our cardiovascular function, and we start to have digestive symptoms, IBS, Crohn's, gas, fatigue after you eat, bowel issues. We could kind of go on, and of course the progression of digestive issues. And this is a really interesting demarcation in the sequence of separation, because we start to feel at this point really separate from that higher sense of wisdom, because we start to think our way through things rather than feel our way through things. We've shunned off feeling. We're like, I don't want to feel anymore. I don't want to deal with sadness. I don't want to deal with anger. I'm going to think. And this is where a lot of people reside, is they kind of give most of their power to thought, to evidence, the double-blind studies, which I endorse, and of course I take into account studies. But what the ancients tell us is that the superior form of knowledge arises from the heart, and that the intellect is secondary. It's in support of the heart, so that the heart gets direct perception, direct knowing from the universe regarding any issue. And we could call that intuition. We could call that just the intelligence of being present. And that if that whole mechanism is suppressed, then what we have to rely on is the intellect and secondary knowledge dictated to us by other people and other people's experiences, that we then have to double check, or we have to mount a case of evidence, meaning get the majority of people that we agree with on a certain issue. And if they agree on an issue, then we go, okay, I believe in that too. But it's still lacking the direct perception, the direct experience. And this is why healing is so powerful, is because when you heal, when you do breath work, when you meditate, when you do these kind of activities that allow you to open up, as you said, Dr. Selman, we need to open up and feel, then we begin to feel for ourselves what is true. And so the spleen, this idea of I'm going to do it on my own, and then, of course, the opposite of that, the self-sufficiency of I'm going to do it my own, I'm on my own, and then we feel needy, and we feel like martyred and victimized by the fact that no one's helping us, and no one's seeing our kind of dire plight of fatigue and diminishment. And that's because we've been giving all of our energy to everyone else and not receiving, not replenishing ourselves. And this is really the epidemic, or even the pandemic, of exhaustion that we have in the West. People are just, exhausted. And we talk about it in functional medicine as adrenal fatigue, and allopathic medicine as adrenal exhaustion, which is its extreme form. And it's because there's this culture of giving, 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 working, 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 and not pausing to receive. And yes, there are lifestyle changes that need to occur, like getting more rest, eating a better diet, getting some acupuncture, chiropractic work, massage, craniosacral work, whatever your healing therapy of choice is. But ultimately, it's opening to receive our own grace and the grace of the universe, and to get that we're not alone and we're not separate and we don't have to be here alone, and that we're meant to walk this journey together as a family of people. We're all on the same journey, and we have to do it individually, but we can do it side by side. And so we start to feel, when we're balanced in this issue, in order to heal this arena of kind of worry and ingratiating other people by giving all the time, is we start to love ourselves. And we love ourselves without having to change ourselves. And this is an important distinction. Often we think in order to change, in order to love ourselves, we have to change. We have to not do something. And what my message is that you don't have to change a thing about who you are. All you have to do is add love to it. So if you're sad, if you're angry, if you worry, if you're afraid, what happens alchemically when you add love to it, right? There's a love is the catalyst that causes those emotions to begin to flow. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's comfortable. But either way, life is uncomfortable. Life is hard. When we add love to something, which is a simple act of, you know what, Luke, you're tired today, you got a cough, you're not feeling well, that's okay. You're going to show up and you're going to do your best. And, it might not be as good as you want it to be. but there's plenty to be grateful for. So it's giving ourselves a pep talk. It's eating food in a particular way. It's breathing. It's feeling. So self-love is this kind of a remedy, energetic, that helps us move through this worry and neediness and overthinking that we see in the spleen, and helps to heal the digestive tract and digestion in general. And it's not, you know, this isn't a cheeky answer. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm really familiar with the spleen energy because that's where I began my journey with Chinese medicine and looking for help. It was to understand the spleen because I had a very, what they call, and maybe you can explain it a bit more, damp spleen. That was a big issue for me in my life, so digestive issues. But it showed up as a lot of insecurity, just not trusting oneself, the not good enough. That was such a big part of that spleen dynamic. And I just wanted to be sure we emphasize that the reason, one of the importance of the spleen is this ability to digest and assimilate. Food, experiences, whatever. It's about digesting and assimilating. And it's not about what you eat. People get so focused on what they eat. But it's not what you eat. It's how you digest and assimilate. And is a metaphor for digesting and assimilating experiences of life as well.
Yeah, it's key.
Can you want to take it from there?
It's the key function of the spleen. And it's such an important nuance of the spleen, digestive system. And if there's a lack of, I mean, I love that you shared that personal vignette, because this is my organ system too, where I've done a lot of around it, and things will show up for me. And it's all about self-acceptance and self-love and just accepting ourselves exactly as we are. And when we do that, then we're able to assimilate. We're able to digest life. We're not constantly trying to change ourselves to adapt to other people's, requests of how we be in the world. So what's the key to digestion in addition to chewing your food? You know, it's to take the time to be, at ease with ourselves. And, for me, at the height of that imbalance, I write about it in Born to Heal. I had this IBS in high school for several years. And looking back, it was that I was insecure. I was nervous. I wanted to be accepted. I didn't fully understand that at the time, because I was so in that experience of growth. But after a few years, I mean, I think it wasn't until my senior year where I finally settled down and was like, you know what? This is who I am, and I relaxed, and my bowels completely settled down. I didn't have these kind of uncomfortable bouts of this kind of dis-ease.
Well,
so,
that's powerful. And I think the other thing I just want to add, from what I understand, is that sitting too much can weaken the spleen, which is a big problem for so many of us, and certainly is for me, since I spend a lot of my day sitting.
Yes. They say sitting is the new smoking, from what I hear. This sitting is it creates so much stagnation. It's so sedentary that there's just a lack of flow of fluids in the body. And of course, the way the digestive system works is peristaltic, meaning the intestines kind of squeeze themselves and push food through the intestines. And if we're not moving, then everything starts to slow down and fluids accumulate and we get this bogginess in the spleen and the digestive tract, and we get dampness and phlegm, and, everything gets slow, the bowel movements slow down, and, the remedy is to move the body. And, how you move the body physically, but how do you move it internally is you feel. You feel what you're feeling, and you start to feel a sense of regard or love for yourself and your experience, no matter how uncomfortable it is, and that starts to help things flow. So this brings us really to the last major organ system and I've kind of woven the heart through this whole talk. But the last kind of form of dis-ease progression brings us to the kidneys and this experience of fear. And fear is such an interesting feeling because the nature of fear when it's pervasive is it's kind of numbing. And within fear, you really have all the other major emotions. It's kind of the linchpin of these other emotions that if we're really afraid, then it's hard to open up and to allow our own grace to be uplifted by the universe. So we have this experience of fear, which gives rise to these behaviors of being ultra conservative and kind of uptight, and then rebellious, kind of like, I'm just going to rebel against the system. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going to deal with this feeling of constriction that you're placing upon me, that society's placing upon me. And I'm going to make my own way. And it's driven by this fear of really feeling through all of the hurt that we've gone through. And of course, we know that life positions us in a way where at some point we have to face our fears. And kind of remedy with this is that we simply have to look at them. We have to examine them and shed light on the things we're afraid of and start to feel slowly into, you know, these spaces within our bodies that are holding emotions and feelings and memories of things that we didn't want to deal with. So similarly, when we're really imbalanced, and we may not even know we're doing this, is that we withhold information from ourselves and from others. And this is one of the ways we can kind of tune into fear. We may not even be feeling afraid, but we notice, you know what, I didn't tell the full truth in this particular arena. Why is that? Oh, I was afraid of creating an upset, or I was afraid that I wouldn't get what I wanted. And so we want to kind of be alert to this experience of withholding things from other people, and that it points to fears that then are places that we can look at and examine and start to ask deeper questions around. But why am I really doing that? What's the worst thing that'll happen if I really share who I am? As we look at that, we gain a certain wisdom and we gain a certain capacity to see more deeply into reality and to have these insights around what we're afraid of and to realize, oh, you know what? I think I can handle this. I think I can handle sharing who I am. And at this stage of the fear, if we don't deal with our fear, then, you know, a whole host of this is what really leads to the picture of chronic disease, is that we've pretty much frozen all of these experiences, emotions, and feelings in time, and they're left there to fester in a certain way, and the body has to summon up energy in order to encapsulate or store all of this unfelt experience. And so when we look at our lives, the simple question to ask is, how much energy am I expending to not deal with something in my life? Like, is it 10% of my energy? Is it 20%? Is it 80%? When I've asked this question in some of my retreats and workshops, I've had people say, you know, 80% of my energy is going to not deal with this particular issue I have with my wife. And it's pretty startling to go, wow, that means I have 20% of my kind of metabolic life force to function. And I'm using most of my life force to just keep these other things in check. And my sense is for most people, it's a pretty high percentage of energy that we're using to not feel. And of course, we're feeling all these other things. We're feeling dissatisfied, feeling separate, feeling alone. One of the saddest things that I work with is usually someone kind of later in their life, and they come in kind of like really big personalities, and they've they've been hurt and they've hurt a lot of people in their lives. And really their chief complaint to me is that they're so lonely and they're so afraid to open up to someone because they've been hurt and they're afraid to hurt people. They've become such kind of like spiky, curmudgeon-y people that this experience of pervasive loneliness has just enshrouded their lives. And it's really the experience of the soul that is left with, you know, being separate. You feel totally separate. It just pervades every system. And, you know, of course, these people are starting to open up and feel, and they're moving through it. I've seen them make progress. But it is a sad thing, you know, this, like, sense of separation from, yes, separation from God. But I think almost more challenging is a sense of separation from each other. For me, that's why this value, really one of my key teachings right now is the teaching of family, and that's to relate to one another as family, which means sometimes we fight and get upset, but we also and always come back and we talk and we work it out and we, you know, breathe through it and we help each other and we stay connected and we feel this connection in our hearts. And that connection, to me, is the very highest experience of being a human being. Yes, there's enlightenment. Yes, there's liberation. There's these states of ecstatic bliss and joy, and I think it's wonderful, and I teach that. But I think even higher than that is an experience of love with each other. And to me, that's the ultimate place of service, that we're serving this mission of family. And if we can do that, if we can work with each other, whether it's our blood family or our friends who have become family, then we help each other heal. That's how we heal. So we get into relationship and we help each other.
That's a perfect place for us to end our conversation because we've come to the end.
Cool.
But I just really want to thank you. You did such a great job. So much more we could have shared. It's a really big story.
Right.
But I know it's a really great way for people to begin to investigate and understand more of themselves, their feelings, the role their feelings and their symptoms. And I want people to visit you at your website, which is lukeadlerhealing.com. And also you can pick up a copy of Luke's book, Born to Heal, which I really recommend because he gives us a chance to get into greater depth of everything we've been talking about today so you can get more understanding of yourself, who you are, and what's going on. So, Luke, it's just such a pleasure to have you on the show. Good luck with everything. It's just been an absolute delight and so enlightening. So we're very grateful to you.
It's been such an honor. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me again today. This is Dr. Cheryl Sumlin. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.